All right, let's turn to Mark chapter 1 tonight. That's where we're going to be at. Mark chapter 1. You need a pen?
Yeah.
Here.
Oh, you got one?
Oh, yeah.
I'll make sure I give it back to you.
If you don't, I got more. Remember, I write everything. That's I got a pen. All right, we're going to be in Mark chapter 1. We're going to start in verse number 16 tonight. Just want to talk about a few things here. We read, as we're reading through, it's like I told a boy the other night. I said, it's fascinating to me, and at the same time, it all makes sense to me the more I read and the more I realize why nobody else sees this stuff. Because they don't read it. They don't read. And the Holy Spirit preaches to you through the Word of God. And that's what I told him. I said, I feel like I get preached to every morning. Because I don't read it ever where I don't get something out of it now. Yep. I remember when I used to read it and it was closed to me. Mm-hmm. And it was just boring and monotonous and it felt like a heavy burden.
Yep.
And it's not that way. It's just not that way. No more. All right. Verse number 16, he says, "Now as he walked by the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishers. And Jesus said unto them, Come ye after me, and I will make you to become fishers of men. And straightway they forsook their nets and followed him. And when he had gone a little farther thence, he saw James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, who were also in the ship, mending their nets. And straightway he called them. And they left their father Zebedee in the ship with the hired servants and went after him." So, that's our text tonight. Four guys that Jesus called to follow him. And I'm just going to just go through this. I don't know. I'm just trying to express what I seen in this. And I don't know. It's one thing to read it. Like, I remember being young and I didn't have life experience, not much at all. So everything was still to happen to me yet. So to read it, there was a big part of the context missing for me because I couldn't relate it to anything yet, you know? So it was just information. And now when I read it, I got all kinds of things to compare it to or to, you know, I can connect it to in my past. But what I have come to learn about that at this point in my life is that there's still a bunch more to come. And so I can relate it to things I already have experienced where I couldn't before. But even though I haven't experienced what's yet to come, I can see the relevance that it will have. So much more than I could back then with what relevance it was going to have. Does that make any sense? I mean, it is. And I don't know. I mean, our days are numbered and I don't know how many I have. But if I have what God said, I guess the average sort of is, I'm over halfway there already. So, you know, there's been a lot happen in 43 years. And a lot more can happen in just a few more. So I told a boy the other night, I said, there's so much can happen in a year, just 1 year of someone's life that fundamentally changes everything forever. Whether it's tragedy or whether it's, you know, rebirth, salvation, whatever, you know, there's a lot that God can do in a person's heart and life in a year. So, I don't know. Just some simple things I want to pull out of this. So we got four fellas, Simon and Andrew. You know who Simon was?
Peter.
Good old Peter. Probably one of about my favorite people in the Bible. He's more relatable than just about anybody that there is. I feel like that Jesus personally did more for him in his ministry, like one-on-one with Peter. Because he needed it, for sure. But that's one of the ways that he's relatable. You know? Lord was rough on him a few times. He He was very patient with him all the time. There he was, Simon and Andrew, his brother, fishing. They were fishermen by trade. And what were they doing? Well, they were casting their nets. They were working. It's like everybody else does. Well, they used to anyways. Most people, that's what we spend our life doing. Working, working, working. Grandpa used to talk about that poem that Grandpa Raymond used to quote, and the line of that poem was talking about a young boy growing up and becoming a man, and one of the lines was, like a mule he shod.
Like a mule for work he shod.
And it's a fact, you know, and it's not a tragedy, and it's not a regretful thing. No, the Lord made man to work.
Yep.
And there is fulfillment and accomplishment and blessing that comes from working. That's, you know, Zach messaged me there the other day and he asked me how I was good up doing. And I said, well, I'm back to work. And it feels good. It does. It feels good to drag all my tools back out and have paint on my hands again. You know, there's new sawdust down there. And it just feels like I'm not loafing no more. And life can proceed. Well, that's what these guys was doing, working. And Jesus come along, and he called them to go with him. He said, follow me. I'll make you fishers of men. I'll make you to become fishers of men. The next fellers was James and John, the sons of Zebedee. We talked about them in Sunday school last month. They're the mother of the sons of Zebedee. Remember her? And, you know, it's neat because when you read this through, you get the overview of the whole story. You know where she was at the end? She was at the cross with Jesus' mother. And, you know, we read that the other day, and I'll just say this has nothing to do with any of this, but it says that all of the disciples forsook him. But Mary and the mother of James and John, the sons of Zebedee, was with her, and Mary Magdalene. And it says that centurion and those that were with him believed and said, surely this was the Son of God. And it says they ministered to them. Never seen that before. But those ladies, those women that were there, ministered to those soldiers and helped them. She was one of them. These boys' mom. Anyway, it was just a neat little thing. I never had seen it before. All of them was fishermen. And these boys was mending their nets. So Simon and Andrew, they were casting their nets. These guys were mending their nets. That's the common thread through these fellas' lives, was their nets. I like to watch sometimes these shows, like not these ones on Discovery that are these reality shows about the fishermen and stuff, because most all that's staged, you know. It makes them lots and lots of money. But, you watch these shows about guys that are fishermen that fish the deep sea, or the ones that fish, like the islands, these natives that fish off the coast of the islands and stuff. And, you know, without their nets, they're just guys with boats. That's it. Their nets are paramount to what they do. And when they're not working with them, they're working on them. And if someone steals their nets, or if they lose them, sometimes they lose them in the sea. And it's devastation because they're expensive. Well, that's what these guys was doing. Working with them, working on them, working for them. You know, think about it. Who was working who? Their nets worked them hard. And, you know, and then the other fellow in the store here is Zebedee. He's the father of James and John, also a fisherman. But he owned the boat. And he had some other employees, servants, the Bible calls them. That all plays into this. So the tools of their trade, nets. They had their nets. Nets are for what? They're for catching stuff. Or holding something down. I don't know. That whole last year when I run around with Wyatt there trapping and stuff, it was on my mind a lot because I enjoyed it. But there was a certain element of tragedy to it because it's You know, it's so much, and I talked about it. You remember, I talked about it a lot, really, about how the devil, you know, the traps that he sets and how relatable that is. You can just see it when you just put the bait out, and it's not even good. It's awful. And the bait gets them, and then they're stuck, and it's their demise. It's the end of the line. And, you know, well, nets are sort of the same way. A net and a snare are not the same thing. A snare you don't ever get out of. And the more you fight it, the more it kills you until you're dead. But a net can be escaped out of. Think about it. Most of the time, now, I've not had a whole lot of experience doing this because it's not quite legal here, but a lot of people used to seine the creeks for minnows and whatever else got stuck in there. The net did not discriminate. And, you know, you would catch stuff with them. You can catch stuff with them, but you see these guys, they don't just throw their net out one time. They throw it over and over and over and over because stuff escapes. You know, when you're seining the creek, you go against the current because the current's pushing them down and you're going up, and they fight it till they can't. There's less chance of them escaping. But I've seen minnows jump the seine. Yeah. Jump it. Find a way under it. Maybe find a hole in it. But they escape. You know, we've set traps for minnows in the creek, and crawdads, trapping crawdads and all that stuff. And, you know, it's amazing how easy it is to catch them, but also how slick they are for getting out. All it takes is one little hole. You can escape from a net. That's why they's always sewing them shut. They're for holding on to things that are gathered together. They're not as strong as you think they are. And I'm going somewhere with this because there's a metaphor here, and I don't know. I guess I see things this way more. I hope it's not a stumbling block to me, but I don't know. I'm trying to find some way to apply this in my own life. And, you know, this whole world's full of a lot of nets. And, you know, nets are heavy. You ever seen them on them boats picking, you know, dragging them nets up on the boat? Nowadays, they got a crane that does it for them. But back then, these old boys was pulling them up over the side by hand. And, you know, it was heavy. The nets alone were heavy. The water they were fishing them in made them heavier. And it was a hard life. You know, these guys off these islands I'm talking about, you see them in their little old wooden boats, and they do it a lot of ways, the old-fashioned way. And they don't make a whole lot of money. They're the poorest people on the whole place, fishermen. You know, the Bible talks about the disciples. A lot of them were fishermen. And people could tell by the way they talked that they were unlearned. No time for school. No time for learning. Got to make a living. The fish ain't going to catch themselves. And, you know, it was kind of like, all right, in different places in the trades, like the building trades, there's a, you know, and I'm not downgrading. I'm just saying there's that the market for these certain elements of the trades are flooded with workers because it don't take a lot of overhead and just about anybody can do it. But like roofing is one of the jobs that it's if you're fast, if you're a hard worker, you can make a lot of money pretty quick doing roofs. Anymore, especially my soul. I heard somebody quoted the price to them the other day, and it was astronomical. I couldn't believe it. But you got to be a lot more competitive with your pricing, and you got to work cheaper when the market's flooded with workers. Well, there was lots of fishermen because there was lots of poor people. So that's why they just stayed poor. They couldn't make a lot of money. That's all they knew how to do. That was their trade. Well, nets are easy for the user to get tangled in themselves. You know, they're one of the most dangerous jobs in the world to this day is those men that fish on that North Atlantic Sea up there, crabbing and all that stuff. Why? Well, because the least little thing, and you're tangled up in the rigging, and over the side you go, and then bye-bye, birdie, you're gone. The sea claims another one. It's dangerous. And, you know, another thing about nets is they take up a whole lot of space. You got a little boat, you're trying to catch a lot of fish, you got to have a big net. And that takes up half the boat. You know, you got to think about it. Jesus said to Simon and Andrew, he said, follow me. He said it to James and John too. But I just want you to think about something for a minute. From the time we get old enough to be aware of what's going on in the world and the direction that we're going to be heading with our life, we start working on nets. You know, I'm not necessarily talking about what you're going to do for a living. It's just the things that you're made up of as a person. It's just how you proceed with life and the things that you do with your life. You know, these men, they didn't have much, but they had some nets. And that's how they lived. And there's ways that people develop their character and their personality. And sadly, most of the time, they're just kind of let grow feral. Just however they want to go. That's what's so important about raising kids, is that you're raising them and you're... It ain't training like training a horse. It's training like you train a tree to grow a certain way. And you're training who they are and who they're going to become and how they're going to live their life. You know, the nets that they'll use in their life to be and do and be with other people. And they can be a tool, or they can be something that's so heavy and burdensome and dangerous that it sinks them to the bottom for good. And so Jesus told these fellas, he said, follow me. Simon and Andrew, he said, follow me. I will make you to become fishers of men. And it says, straightway they forsook their nets and they followed him. Well, look to the next one, and it says that about James and John. And he told them to follow him. And they left their father Zebedee. Now, I'm not saying they didn't forsake, I'm not trying to overcomplicate the simplicity of the way this is worded, okay? What I'm trying to point out is you had four men, and two of them followed Jesus, and they gave something up in a different kind of way than the other two did. You know, a lot of times we're looking for rules to follow because it simplifies our obedience. And it leaves it up to our intellect to just figure out the rules, see what he wants, and then do it. And it gets presented out there to everyone like it's just the same for everybody. If everybody follows the same pattern, then the same result will be. And Jesus asked these men to follow him, and they forsook their nets. And these other men left their father and the ship and the servants. They all wound up following Jesus, but for Simon and Andrew, they couldn't just put it all on hold. And that says they forsook them. They didn't drag their nets along with them. They didn't say, give us a second, let's roll them up and put these things under lock and key because they're valuable. I mean, we can't, you know. They forsook them. I've often wondered about that. I remember hearing these stories as a little kid and thinking, well, what happened to their boat? How did they make a living after that? I remember being little and thinking about that. I was a weird little kid. But the thing is that think about who we're talking about here. Now, from this end of it, we know that was Peter. What did Peter constantly, what was he always trying to do? Well, Peter was impulsive. Okay, Peter was an impulsive man. It didn't matter what it was. He was always the first one to speak up and volunteer. First one to speak up and give his answer first. He was always one with a suggestion like, let's just stay up here and build temples for y'all and we'll just, it's good for us to be here. He was the one who swung his sword at the man trying to lop his head off. He was the first one to deny him. Peter. So it makes a little bit more sense that he just forsook everything. Just left it and run. Okay. And you also got to think about this. For him, it was that commitment for him was all or nothing. Now, James and John were different. They looked at the situation and said, but, okay, well, there's Dad. You know, I think the reason why even the servants were mentioned here is because they looked at it and they wouldn't leave their dad by himself. But he had the servants, so, okay, look, we can go. And they did. The nets that we must forsake or leave behind can come in all different forms. And it's different for different people. And it's important to remember that. There's things that God is going to want me to do. And call His call to me to follow Him is going to demand something different from me than it might from you. Now, the goal is for you to follow Him. That's what He wants from all of us. But I may be dug in a lot harder than you are. And it may cost me more to obey Him than you. There may be something different about my character. You know, people seem to collect nets through life, don't they? I look at things. I'm bad about saving everything. I don't throw anything away. I have to go through every 2 or 3 years and purge everything because I'm literally out of room. And I don't know why I have all this. Even in my wallet. I've literally, purposefully downsized my wallet from the thing that I had before to this right here. Because I just couldn't sit on it anymore. It hurt. It was like sitting on a book. But, I mean, it was like my filing cabinet. Everything went in the wallet, went in my wallet, went in my wallet. And after a while, I'd have to go through it and clean it out and be like, why did I save that? What is this even for? Who cares about, I mean, I save it all. And that's an insignificant thing that can be quickly remedied. But what about all the other things we hang on to in this life? And I'm not just talking about sentimental things or you know, old rolls of wire and spare little blocks of wood. I've got buckets of them because I'll build something out of them one of these days. You always need a 5/8 shim for something, don't you? I mean, if you're jacking something up, you just need that much more than all you got to do before. It creates problems. You save that stuff. About every 2 or 3 years, I have a big burning. Well, a call to follow Jesus is a call to have a burning. To have an evaluation of all this stuff that's holding you back. That's what nets do. You know, they were working these nets, or was the nets working them? I think old Simon there, old Peter, He might have felt like they were just holding. How many times do you reckon he chucked that net in the lake, in that sea, and thought to himself how bad he hated doing this again? Pull it up, nothing again. Ugh. And they even talked about it. They fished all night, and they said, we ain't caught a single thing. Fishing all night? You think they slept all day? I doubt it. They mended nets all day. Them nets was a heavy burden for them. I think some of them didn't like them more than others. That's why James and John said, all right, y'all going to be okay? All right, we're going. And Peter just run. He just forsook them. Hallelujah, finally, there's something else to do. Woo! But no, I want you to think about it and just make the application in your own life. I think about the things, the nets that I have. And here's the deal. You build your own nets.
Yeah.
And then in all your downtime, all you're doing is working on fixing how frail and fragile and incompetent they are. You work on them constantly. Constantly. You're working on your nets. And they're the very things that are keeping you held back. You know? I want you to think about something else. I had a list of stuff here that I wrote down that could be things that are our nets. But I don't know. The power of suggestion is pretty strong. And I think that everybody, if they're honest with themselves, when it gets quiet, you think about your life. You ever feel like the Lord is calling you to something better and bigger? And what's the first thing you do? What about these nets? I'd love to, but I got this. Well, I'd love to, but what about this? And I'm kind of restricted in what I can do because of what? Because of these nets, man. And yet we spend all our time maintaining them. And everybody knows what your net is. I mean, I know what they are in my life. I think the Lord points them out to me. But everybody's is, it can be different for everybody. It can be something that's internal, something of the soul and the mind. You might have everything. I mean, I know people who have every opportunity in the world to do for the Lord, to follow Him. And I'm not talking about like full-time Christian service. I'm talking about just being a faithful, steady child of God. And then, you know, what about those sins that do so easily beset us? You know, they're not just like some trap you step in. They're snares. And they're things that are put there purposefully. And you kind of know about them. I talked to a boy one time. He was talking about snares for coyotes. And he said, they're so smart. He said, I put that snare in there and I wore gloves and everything because that's their biggest weapon is their nose. Boy, they can smell way better than a dog. And he said, I put that snare up there and he said, I put a camera over there watching it. And he said, for 2 weeks, every night, they put it right on their trail where they ran. And they'd run right up to it and stop and sit down and smell it. And then they'd go around it. They knew where the snare was. A dirty old coyote could figure it out and not get caught. But they do. Because they get to where they ignore them. Same here. You know, we all know what our nets are. Where the nets are. We know what they are. But a call to follow Jesus is a call to forsake your nets. It's a call to discipline. Yes. It ain't easy figuring these things out and then doing something about them. Right. I've told y'all this before, but back years ago, we used to think we was cowboys and try to ride bulls. Fools. But I had a buddy, and he lived for it. He just lived and breathed. And I mean, he just studied it and watched it. And you could talk to him, and I'm telling you, he could wax eloquent in this explaining it to you. I mean, he could preach it to a bunch of guys and they'd all just sit there and listen to him. And then we'd go to the bull riding and he'd get on a bull and about two jumps out and he'd hit the dirt. Bam. I'd never seen a guy get hurt more than him. He had his retina separated in his eye, had his shoulder separated two or three times, broke his legs, broke his arms, busted his head, knocked his teeth out. I mean, but he could literally talk to you and you'd think he was the best bull rider in the world because of how he could just describe it to you. The trial was doing it. Yeah. You know, we sit in church all our life and listen to how to find the nets, how to get rid of them, how to follow, how to do it. And we don't. Right. We can tell other people how to do it, which most time, that's what most people spend all their life doing, is trying to find nets in other people's lives. Mm-hmm. And tell them how to avoid the nets in their life when they literally won't do for themselves. You know, Jesus didn't make these guys leave their stuff. He asked them to follow Him and they did it. And I don't think for a minute that Peter hated his nets so bad that he was just like, what am I going to do with this stuff? I don't know. Throw it in the sea and leave. No, but he looked at the options that he had and the cost and it was worth it to forsake them. He was the kind of person that couldn't fish during the week and just follow Jesus on the weekends.
Right.
You know, he was all in. Something else I thought about was this. These guys didn't forsake fish.
Right.
Or fishing. Because Jesus had them fish every now and then. They liked to eat. And they liked to eat fish. I mean, what's the old song say? There they found their heart's desire, bread and fish upon the fire. And everywhere they went, that's all they were really worried about. First was food. We talked about that here a while back. What do we got to eat? What are we going to eat? Did you bring food? No, I thought you brought food. Well, we got to go get food. So it ain't like they just forgot about that. But it was something that they were willing, even temporarily if it was, to forsake. Because there was something more important to do right now. You know? Things like our jobs and our bills and, you know, the necessities of life are not something that you can just forsake. I've known people that said, the Lord's calling me into full-time ministry. I'm going to be a missionary. And it was like, and I know this is ugly to say it, but I've always called it Christian welfare. Because they don't have to work no more. And they can just go to churches and people send them money every month. It is the berries. Because we just travel all over the United States now for, I don't know, 5, 4, 5, 6, 7 years. And we just present, all we got to do is just take a trip every once in a while. Hey, guess what? That's paid for too. Yeah! This is fantastic. Why didn't we think of this before? I'm being very facetious when I say this. But it's really sad because I want you to think about it. In the 80s and the 90s especially, you realize how many more missionaries there were that were going on deputation and then they'd go to the field. And now, there just ain't no more missionaries. And the ones that are bilking the system. They're making usury. They're usury out of the flock. A lot of them are. And then if they do go to the field, I'm telling you what, I've seen it with my very own bare eyeballs. They live like it's permanent vacation. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, you ain't got to be that smart to have a computer and put together a prayer letter once a month with some pictures. Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah. It's bad. But I've seen it. They forsook everything. Like, I'm saying, these guys here, they didn't just walk away from it for what they could get out of it. They still had to make a living. Paul, he was a missionary and traveled and did all this stuff, and he still had to work every once in a while. Matter of fact, he made it a point to work because he said, I need to. And, you know, he was able to minister while he worked. But he worked. And I don't think for a minute that these fellows, I mean, look, they followed Jesus for 3 years. And then he left. And for 3 years, he made sure they ate. He made sure that they had somewhere to stay. I don't think that for 3 years they didn't hit a lick. I don't think that. No. But in that moment, he asked them to follow him and they were willing to do it. And trusting that he would take care of the rest. And that's all he's asking us to do too. With our nets. I mean, look. The matter of working can become a really heavy net. And I'm talking about the instability, the insecurity. Everybody in here has either been through it or are going through it or will go through it someday. Where jobs are the heaviest net you got. The bills are the heaviest thing in your life. And they literally are drowning you. You just feel like you're drowning. And to think about just saying, you know what, I'm forsaking them and walking away seems to be like a real, yeah, where's the line? I'll sign up for that. And in the reality of things, yeah, we can't just walk away from our job and just superimpose that on the Lord. Like these people that do that, like they hold their breath until God will do what they want. That's not what He wants either. But there is a way to continue on. And look, I have had jobs before that I hated them from the first 30 minutes that I was there. And I was there for years. And I don't know how I did it. Until one day I just decided not to be there no more. I did all that without the Lord. You know? And I, you know, and when I think about it sometimes, and it's my stories, right? Y'all have all probably heard me tell them a bunch of times. But if I would have had the Lord to rely on then, I could have worked that job. I've told her since then, if I had to go back and work that job now, I think I could do it. I think I could do it. Because it's not a net for me anymore. When back then it was about how many more nickels or quarters an hour I could get, how many more days of overtime I was going to have to work, who wasn't doing their job while I was there, so I had to do it too, you know, having to deal with that specific group of people. It was just drowning me. But, you know, it's funny. When we were over there this last trip, we was with her dad and we went to Home Depot. And I'm walking down the aisle and I've seen a guy I used to work with there. And he's seen me and we made eye contact. And I knew his name and everything. And I didn't want to be weird because I hadn't seen him in probably 14 years. He still looked exactly the same. I'm sure I do too. But he's seen me. He did a double take. And I seen him and I just looked at him and it for like that 2 seconds and it was weird. And then I looked back and he looked back at me and it was weird. And then I just kept on walking, you know. But it brought back a lot of people that I'd forgot about to my mind. I started thinking about it and I was like, man, I wonder if they're still stuck in that terrible place. But I seen a lot of them drowned because of that net. I seen homes broke up. I seen men leave their wives, women leave their husbands, people. Oh, I seen all kinds of horrible things because it was a net to them, yeah. And it got them. Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, we all got to work, and by the sweat of our brow, it's how we make bread. It's just how it is. But it don't have to be a net.
Right.
Don't let it be a net. The Lord will help you. There's ways around nets. There's ways around them, and you can escape from them. I've been trapped by them before, and I escaped. It was because he helped me. He made a way of escape.
Right.
You know? They didn't forsake fishing or fish, but what they did in obedience didn't put down other fishermen either, including Zebedee. You ever think of that? I mean, here, all these guys just followed this guy, and there they went, walking down the beach. You know? You reckon Zebedee heard Jesus ask them boys? Follow me. I expect he did. I expect he did. You think he might have wanted to go with them too? I expect he did. But he couldn't. He'd done been in that net too long. He had other people depending on him. He was older than them. And his life had... He just got kind of walled in by it. Didn't mean he couldn't serve. I mean, like I said, later on in the Gospels there, you see them. You see them again. And they were involved. You know. But he didn't get to go with them that day.
Right.
You know, he still was able to serve, but not like them. Think of all of the memories that them guys lived with till the day they died that Zebedee didn't have. He's just still dragging nets around. Well, my point about that is this. Them boys were young.
Right.
They were young. You know, Ecclesiastes 12:1. Remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth. Why do you think it said that? While the evil days come not, nor the years draw nigh, when thou shalt say, I have no pleasure in them. The years. No pleasure in those years. You wind up walling yourself in with the nets of life until you limit yourself in the capacity that you can serve, really. I mean, serve the Lord, follow Him. So when you're young, you know, Jesus is calling you to follow Him now.
Yes.
Forsake the nets. That's what I'm trying to say. Them boys, they weren't in it long enough yet to be trapped. And they were able to just say, forsake them. Forsook their nets. Then boys looked at their dad and said, you got this? And he said, yeah, I'm here. All right, here we go. They were able to do it. Now, I don't know what happened after the 3 years, outside of what the Bible says about how that they preached everywhere the name of Jesus and Him crucified. But they still had to make a living. They still had to pay taxes. Rome was still a thing, you know. They had to eat. Peter had a wife. They had families. So I don't think they just never worked again. I suspect it because they were fishermen. They went back and fished every once in a while and tried to make some money. They had to. But it didn't trap them forever. Not like it had their dad. You know? And that's what you ought to remember as young people. And it don't matter if you're 6 or if you're 21 or if you're 82. You know, there's always a way to walk away from the nets. And there's a way to keep them from becoming a thing in your life. And, you know, just one more thing here. Obedience is always possible, but there is a season where it's a lot easier to do. And then I'm also going to read a few scriptures here. Proverbs 29:25, the fear of man bringeth a snare. Now remember I said nets aren't snares. In the 1828 Webster's Dictionary, you look up net and it says a net is not a snare. Wait a minute, a snare. You look up snare and it says a snare is not a net. Specifically. The fear of man bringeth a snare. But whoso putteth his trust in the Lord shall be safe. There's lots of verses in the Bible about snares. You know, nets, there's a way of escape most of the time, but not a snare. I said that. You know, the fear of man. Me and her was driving down the road the other day and we was talking about people in debt. Okay, that's what we were talking about. And I said, it's funny because when you're young, your concept of what other people think of you because of what you have or don't have makes you make the stupidest decisions of your whole life. And then, here you sit with the stuff you can't pay for. And then, you beat yourself up because of your concept of what other people are thinking about you, about the mess you're in now. So, your fear of what they think or don't think about you got you into the mess that you are now worried about what they think about you, you know. Moral of that story is, you know, what people think about you ain't nearly as important as what you think it is. And the fear of man, that's what that is. The fear of man is what they think about you. How many people do you know have destroyed their lives as a young person and added, I mean, they wove their nets for sure. All because of what they thought somebody was going to think about them or not. I've seen boys go out. It's the joke around. I say joke. It's a calamity is what it is. But these boys, you know, they won't go to college. They'll go to the trade school and they'll learn how to weld and they'll get certified. And then they get them a job and they're like 21 years old and they're making 80 grand a year. Bam. Just like that. Went to school for one year, 2 years, get certified. And here they go. Well, the first thing they do is they get a girlfriend and a big jacked up Chevy truck. They go down there to the bluff and buy them a rice trailer, and then they stop by the Honda place on the way out of town and buy them a side-by-side. And then they take all that stuff home, and then they go back to the bluff and buy them a riverboat so they can go hang out on the current when they're not working, which is never because they're always out on the road working. And they work for about 2 or 3 years, and then they don't want to do it no more. It ain't fun. They're just paying all their money for all these toys, and they never get to play with them. So they come home. Usually by then, they're a father. And wives, they don't like guys gone all the time. Girlfriends do, but wives don't. And now they have to sell all their stuff at a discounted rate and find them a job making a lot less money. And then about 3 years later, she leaves him and takes what he had left. I can name you names of boys, literally, that I know personally. In Wayne County, that this has happened to. Because all they was worried about was what people thought about them. Got to have all this stuff so people think I'm, look at me. It was a snare. Mm-hmm. It killed them.
Yeah.
Exodus 23:33. They shall not dwell in thy land, lest they make thee sin against me. For if thou serve their gods, it will surely be a snare unto thee. Snare. Serving their gods. That's another thing that can take you down. It's not a net, it's a snare. And I don't know. That's where it seems to start. A lot of people start in the net and they wind up snared. You serve their gods, it'll kill you. You won't make it. 1 Samuel 18:21, and Saul said, I will give him her, that she may be a snare to him. And that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. There's a lot of people that worry themselves into a snare over this. About who you wind up with as a mate. Along about 16, 17, 18, they start hitting the wall because it's never going to happen. And they make stupid choices based on what they think other people think about them. And their pride's involved in it. And old Saul, that's what he said, I'll give her to him. That's talking about Michael and David. He heard that Michael loved David. Oh, did she now? No, she didn't. He said, this is it. I'll give him her. Not so that he'll be distracted. No, she'll be a snare to him. Every time it just tightens up more and more and more until he's dead. Why? So the Philistines, so their hand could be against him. It'll make him weak. She'll be such a snare to him that it'll just choke the life out of him. The Philistines can finally kill him. Well, she didn't make it. I wonder if she had of how long it would have took for her to be a snare. Saul wasn't much, but he knew what she was. That's for sure. Well, you know, that's real important too. Young people, that's who the Lord is wanting. He wants you now. Now's when He told you to remember Him and follow Him when you're young. But that's also something that's going on when you're young. And it's a big choice. I think it's one of the biggest crossroads that young people come to where they make a choice between God or who they marry. Don't have to be that way. God's way is not that way. But that's where most people forsake Him, not the nets. And they go down the drain. You know, your pride gets involved in it. Every year that ticks by, you think about more and more. You hear more and more about what people say about you, what they assume about you. And then if you do wind up in a relationship, they got a whole other book of things to say about you. They ain't very nice either. Well, that's why he said, the fear of man bringeth a snare. Don't worry about them. There's another verse, and I didn't write it down, but it said, what did it say? Fear not their faces. Something I can't remember. I can't quote it. Don't fear their face. Don't. You look in their face, you're going to lose your nerve. You ought to stand up here sometime and publicly speak. That's what I was telling him the other day. We were talking about singing and being nervous about singing. And I said, I've sang to that clock back there on the wall more than any of y'all. Lots of times. I remember being a little kid and we traveled, and I'd never been in front of people. And I'd lose my words. I'd stand up there and my legs would shake so bad that I felt like I was going to fall down. I always tried to get behind the pulpit so nobody could see my legs. So they would just, I literally was just trembling so bad my hands would clench like this. I'd tremble and shake and try not to sound like a billy goat when I sang. Because I was shaking so bad. Well, Mom told me, she said, look at the back of the church and sing to something on the wall. And that helped a bunch. Yeah, because I didn't look at their faces. Somebody, people got all kinds of advice about public speaking. And let me just say that does not work. You know, picture them all this way or that way. No, don't do that. Don't look at their face. The fear of man brings a snare. And it will in this stuff too. You know, whatever stage you're in of life and whatever you are forsaken to follow the Lord, there's always going to be people with an opinion about that. Don't listen to them. The ones that won't follow Him ain't never going to have anything good to say about you anyway. They didn't say very nice things about Jesus Himself. So, Psalm 106:36, and they served their idols, which were a snare unto them. Snare. Idols. You know, and this is a whole other thing, but you know, people make idols out of all kinds of things. And it's not just a bass boat, and it's not just a NASCAR, and it's not just a golf club or a fishing pole or a turkey gun. No, it can be your kids. I literally know people who have forsaken the law of the Lord for their children. They have sided with the enemies of God for their children. They have compromised all of everything they've ever said they believed for their children. They made idols out of them. I hear a preacher talk all the time. And one of the things he prays for, he said, I prayed for this when my kids was little. Now I pray for it about my grandkids because it's 10 times worse with them. He said, Lord, please don't let me make idols out of them. Don't let me do it. Because if you serve your idols, it's a snare. You're done. You can't serve God and mammon, and you can't follow Jesus and hang on to your nets. So, figure out what your nets are. Let the Holy Spirit show you, and then do it. Forsake them. Do the work it takes. It ain't easy, but He'll help you. And it can be done. And one, you know, think about everything they would have missed if they would have just said, well, I'd love to, but I can't leave my nest. I can't. This is how I eat. This is how I make my living. I bet you that they blessed the day they forsook their nets. And you will too. You will too. Amen.